Coming to you from various places around the world, this is the Global Exhibitor Podcast, the podcast designed to help exhibitors succeed internationally.
You have challenges in both. They're just different kinds of challenges. You still have to have really good content and compelling reasons for people to be part of it. I mean, if you don't have a story to tell and a good message to tell that you're really passionate about, you know, that you need to get out, then people don't buy into it anyways.
Your host for the Global Exhibitor Podcast is Jeff Hanna, a designer, entrepreneur, business strategist, industry thought leader, and student of world cultures based in the United States. Here's your host, Jeff Hanna.
Well, thank you, Craig, and hi, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Global Exhibitor Podcast. Today, we're going to be playing an excerpt from a recent conference called Rethinking Events. It's a virtual conference where I appeared on a panel along with Mr. Joey DeFranco, and we were interviewed about all things virtual events or online events, digital events, many terms that could be used for that. But we're going to re-air a portion of that for you today on the Global Exhibitor Podcast, and hope you enjoy that. Rethinking Events, if you want to go to their website, I'll mention it now, but that's rethinking.events. And it is produced by several companies. I think most of them are based in the Atlanta area. NovaLogic being kind of the foundational company, along with Applebox and several other companies, put on this event. And there are a number of well-known speakers there, which hopefully you could listen to after this online. And we would urge you to do that. Those are people like Ken Coleman, who's a national best-selling author, and Deanne Turner, who's former head of talent at Chick-fil-A, and Tiffany Crummins from Shark Tank, and many others, Dr. Rodney Agin, John Winstanley, and some people like that who are good friends of mine. But today we're going to be talking on this panel about virtual events, and Mr. Mastin Worley, who is the director of sales at Exhibit Concepts, is the person who's asking the questions on the panel. And you'll hear from Mr. Joey DeFranco as well, and he's director of Next Lab at Exhibit Concepts, and that is New Experiential Technologies Lab at ECI or Exhibit Concepts. And we deal there in that department with everything related to technology. That includes virtual online events, augmented reality, virtual reality, and many other things that we produce in-house with that team for our clients across the spectrum of industries, from executive briefing centers to museums, immersive educational environments, and the trade show industry. So let's jump right in to this portion of Rethinking Events, and Mastin Worley is teeing it up with the first question for me and Joey.
When thinking about changing an event from live to virtual, what's the biggest mistake you can make?
So I think it's really important to not lose sight of the goals, right? When we do an event and work in the face-to-face world, we really are solving kind of a sales and marketing initiative, right? We have goals that we set out for going to that event. We're demonstrating products, we're collecting leads, we're kind of growing our funnel from a sales standpoint, and we don't ever want to lose sight of those goals. So whether we're doing something face-to-face and in person or doing something virtually, you know, where I always like to start kind of in any situation when we're looking at these type of events is, what is the end goal? What are we trying to accomplish? And make sure that that is kind of our rock at the end of our ideation, to make sure that we always have those kind of clear and in focus.
That's great. What are the biggest mistakes you're seeing as it relates to virtual events?
Do you want me to take it
on
first?
Go for it.
Well, I think probably the biggest thing is the mindset going into this, that you're just going to replicate what you do in real life through a virtual event. And the reality is, you can't. I mean, you can approximate it in some ways, but it's still going to be different. And you should think about it differently. And that's hence part of this whole conference, or this event online, is Rethinking Events. You should think about it differently, because it isn't the same thing. You know, personally, I'm quite biased toward the face-to-face world. That's what we do. And virtual has a place in that mix, but it isn't the same thing. And there are a lot of differences. So I think the mindset has to be different and you have to think about it differently. I mean, we're experimenting right now with a lot of different things that can kind of replicate virtual spaces and worlds, you know, and things like that, which work for some situations. Maybe we'll talk about that later. But I think that generally speaking, you have to take a different mindset and a different approach to it generally. And understanding that now you're going to go in this vehicle versus that vehicle, what is that going to really look like for you? And then design accordingly and utilize the best practices that you can in this vehicle that we're using. But it isn't just taking, you know, we've done some of those recent situations where we had participated in a virtual event and the booth was replicated sort of in a 2D kind of flat skewed perspective.
Yeah, it was almost like a video game where you're navigating through a virtual space. And, you know, for me, it reminds me of the design trend around a decade ago called skeuomorphic design, where the designers would try to replicate real, like, light treatments and textures and materials in digital design because it was familiar to people. And so when the first iPhone came out, you know, the calculator had wood grain and buttons that had sheen on them to make them look 3D, just to kind of make that leap into technology easier for folks. And I think as we move on through virtual events and watch this kind of grow and become more standard, I think you're going to start to see some of those elements shed away. So right now, you know, we're very much trying to translate the architecture, and a lot of folks are in virtual events are trying to translate the architecture and find a space for the architecture in a virtual event. And I think long term, those kind of things are going to slip away in the virtual event piece, because you'll realize that it's not necessarily helping you get any closer to your goal. It may look really good and may be familiar in the near term, but, you know, as we approach the long term and kind of the more permanent place of virtual events in our industry, I think you're going to see more of that goal-focused design kind of bubble up to the top.
Well, and a lot of that I do think has its place, and I like it to an extent, but some people, it works well with them because they really want to see that or imagine themselves in that environment, you know, whereas other people don't care about that. It isn't about that. It just complicates it for them a little bit more, and they would rather have a, well, just, you know, connect me with the person kind of thing. I don't need the virtual steps, you know, down the hallway.
Yeah, and, you know, we create experiences for business, right? Like, that is what we do. We allow attendees and people to experience our architecture, experience our spaces, but there is kind of a mentality on the show floor, right, where you want to be the prettiest jungle bird, right? You want to have the biggest plume and the biggest feathers and attract people in from the aisleway to be able to, you know, show off your product and connect with them. But as we go into virtual, you find a lot of people that are pre-registering for these events. And the marketing efforts, the big plumes and the attraction is happening earlier on prior to the event. So you want to make sure that the person who's shown intent and committed to the event is, you know, when they show up there, that they're getting what they need out of it, as well as you as a exhibitor are getting what you need out of it. And so there's just a different way to look at it. The analogy I like to use is, you know, in the future, if we invented a teleporter, right, and we could get people from, you know, I could transport you from here to the grocery store like that, would I make the teleporter look just like a car because you were familiar with it? Would you sit down in it, turn it on, grab the steering wheel, and it would take you to the store, or would we just make it work to get you to where you need to go? And I don't think it needs to be quite as black and white as that, but I like to kind of put that in from a framing standpoint to know that it's okay sometimes in the virtual world to kind of let go of the boundaries of physics and gravity and booth size. Like, when you're virtual, you don't have to have a 10 by 10. You could have 1,000 by 1,000, or, you know, 200 stories tall if you were designing a space. And you're just not bound by the normal laws of being in a conference center on the show floor.
So many good points. So can you guys talk a little bit about the differences in audience in virtual event versus in-person event?
I think you have a lot of hurdles in virtual that you don't have in true face-to-face. Like, you know, face-to-face marketing is wonderful and those experiences are wonderful when you go to a show or when you go to an environment, because you can't make that connection. The connection is the path of least resistance, right? To go talk to somebody, that's your shortest path. Where in virtual, you have to kind of have all these bells and whistles to wrap around getting to talk to somebody. We were working on an event recently where we were talking about name tags and how complicated name tags are in a virtual event, because, you know, normally it's just a piece of tape with your name on it when you're you're on the show floor, but in order to do that virtually, you're writing code and you're building avatars and profiles and you're kind of building this experience when all you're trying to do is display someone's name. And it's, I think you're going to find that balance where it's things that are easy and accessible in the face-to-face world are harder in the virtual world. And on the flip side, I think your audience at a virtual event, you know, if you do it well, is going to be almost more engaged because you'll get them for longer. You know, I know we hosted a virtual event back in May, and we had a really solid group of viewers from the beginning to the end of the event, and that was 2 hours long. And I can't ever imagine the last time I spent 2 hours at someone's booth on the trade show floor. And so I think you have this trade-off where you miss some of that connection piece and some of the ease of connecting, but you also have maybe more of an audience that has built an intent and is not just window shopping. They are there for a purpose. They have something in mind that they want to get out of your virtual event. And so by having them, you know, attend that event, you have a better possibility of getting what you need out of them as a customer or an attendee.
Yeah, I see a lot of differences between the two when you really contrast. That's what I was working on the other day in my whiteboard in my office about the differences. Though, if you're traveling to Vegas for a show and you're at the show, you're there in person. You know, you're not, well, sometimes you're in the room working on emails or people may be out partying or whatever they do in Vegas, which we don't know because they can't tell you, right? It doesn't leave. That's the biggest misnomer. Everything that happens in Vegas does leave Vegas. Yeah. But anyway, that being said, they're at an event, but you're really distracted at an event because there's a lot of people walking around, talking to you, and other things going to kind of get your attention and distract. I guess in the home environment or in your office, if you're attending a virtual event, you can put it on pause or you can walk away or you do something with your dog or whatever. And that can be distracting too. So I don't know. I guess there's balances here and there, but you can rewind if you miss something often.
And that's a great point too, though, is that face-to-face events are fleeting, right? They happen in an instant and they're gone. And there's, you know, you have your 2 or 3 days, and they're also, you know, cost a fair amount of money to go attend in person. You have travel and lodging and all that kind of stuff. So you may send one person from your team to an event in person and then expect them to come back and relay what they can. Yeah. Where in a virtual event, you could send the entire team and they could have a record of what they've seen. You know, a lot of virtual events from a best practice standpoint will leave content up prior or post-event date. They'll have downloadable documents and different links and things to share and kind of a follow-up message track, so you are in with the content for a much longer period of time and have that accessibility that you don't get from a face-to-face.
Yeah, true. Wow, those are great insights. I really hope that, you know, the audience is enjoying you guys, you know, really kind of going back and forth and just kind of riffing over the subject. So what's considered harder and what's considered easier with a virtual event?
You know, you have budget challenges and you have logistical challenges and all that too. I mean, probably, you know, the vast majority of my career has been spent focused on, you know, producing in real life kind of events. But so I know those challenges quite well and am familiar also with the virtual world. But you have challenges in both. They're just different kinds of challenges. You still have to have really good content and compelling reasons for people to be a part of it. I mean, if you don't have a story to tell and a good message to tell that you're really passionate about, you know, that you need to get out, then people don't buy into it anyway. It's just like Simon Sinek talks about, the people buy why you do what you do kind of thing. And that still needs to be there. And each avenue you go down, each path has its own set of challenges, you know, whether it's getting graphics changed at the last minute, you know, because the lawyers needed to make a change to the copy or whatever. That's easier to do probably in the virtual world than it is in the real world. But
I think that, you know, not that anyone ever wants to look to the failures of things, but I think in virtual events you have a greater chance of of the event not working. I think we've all probably attended webinars or things like that where there's tech issues. You also have individual tech issues, right? Frustration builds, and forever they are associating that frustration with that event with your brand. Where when you're in person, right, like if a screen doesn't work, you can still talk to somebody. If a graphic is wrong or needs to be removed, or even if a product breaks, you can still have that conversation and you can kind of pivot on the fly. And in virtual, you don't necessarily have that opportunity. And so I think it's just a little bit more of a focused point of when you are looking at what could go wrong from like an umbrella theory standpoint, you know, virtual has that possibility.
That caused me to think about just in terms of the feedback loop, in terms of monitoring how well it does from a sentiment standpoint. I mean, I think that's the one thing I like about even speaking in events is in front of an audience. You know, you can read their body language, you can see what their facial expressions look like, or if they're watching you or not watching you, or if they're falling asleep or whatever, which never really happens when, no. But, or if they're checking email or if they're checked out totally, you can kind of monitor that versus, you know, when you're doing a virtual event.
Yep.
I mean, you can do the metrics and all that stuff, but to know, you know, are they really buying into what you're saying, it's hard to gauge that, I think.
Yeah, and the other, I would say, a positive thing from a virtual event standpoint too is that accessibility. So I kind of mentioned like people can access it in all different ways, and that is something that, again, looking at the cost of going to attend a face-to-face piece, like virtual events can be accessed from your phone, they can be accessed from your TV, from your computer, and so you have this kind of added benefit of an increased audience. I know another group we were working with recently on a virtual event, they have folks that are all over the country in all different sizes, you know, everything from large municipalities to rural, you know, audiences within their business, and the attractiveness of being able to have a virtual event that everybody can access in some way, shape, or form. And if there are people that rely on their phone as their primary device, they can still get the information they need from the event to be able to do their work. You know, because with the current climate, it's we have to kind of look at where we are at from a exhibitor standpoint, from a you know, conference center owner and management where they're at, but also too from an attendee standpoint. Like there's a certain comfort level with returning to face that I think is gonna, you know, I think there will be events long before you have the full audience back to where they need to be. And so by having virtual options, you're able to capture that audience still where maybe they are not comfortable with going to a large conference hall yet, even if shows are going on with social distancing and precautions in place. And so, you know, I think it's important to kind of weigh the both sides of the coin, I guess, on that. So
because we've historically been strictly face-to-face, what's been the biggest surprise to you regarding virtual events?
I think for me, and this is a personal thing, but I think the kind of shock to the system that the industry went through in March was a big surprise to me. Like just understanding like that there, how far we were all away from virtual events and kind of what tools were out there, and that there was that ideation and that development that we all needed to kind of put our heads together collectively as show providers, exhibitors, clients from a face-to-face marketing standpoint, because there was no easy pivot right away. Like virtual events were it rolls off the tongue very easily. It's easy to say, but what is that? And what is that to our clients? What is that to us as exhibitors? I think I was kind of shocked that it didn't come easier. I think that we had to have the discussions and the ideations and work through it as a collective audience of both clients and providers, because we just weren't prepared for it. No one saw what happened in March coming, and so I think it was interesting and a surprise for me to see that. That's a little bit more of a broader answer, but
I think the biggest surprise for me, looking at the whole of it, is that it's not really a surprise, but it's maybe a realization about the fact that people crave in-person experiences. And that is like completely screaming loud today, not to knock virtual events, because that's the only thing that you can do really right now. And it has its place, which maybe we'll talk more about that in the overall scheme of things. But it does bring to light the fact that people just really like, I mean, humans attract other human beings. People attract people is a thing that I've been saying for years with regard to live events. So if you have people in a space, if they're all standing around looking at something on the floor, even other people will come to see what they're looking at, because people attract people. And we just have that innate desire to be together. And I think that's really brought to bear the value of face-to-face experiences. And certainly virtual has its place. And yes, you're right, we weren't ready for it as a world. It's driven that home for sure. And I'll be interested to see how it balances out over time.
Yeah, I think there's also the opportunity that a situation like the current climate brings, where you have this push for technology, right? So as a technology person, that to me is very exciting, because you have a global drive to improve this experience, right? Where you kind of have this flash in the pan, like, okay, we got to solve this communication problem. We got to connect more people. We got to be able to bring people together in as close to a face-to-face way as we can virtually. And you have all these different tech pieces starting to spin up and pop up. And even in our strategy as an exhibit house, like how we are putting our digital tools to use, you know, it causes resources to be dedicated to that. It causes people to be dedicated to that. And it also gets clients in front of that and being able to use that tool. You know, for us, we were looking at virtual augmentation of our architecture for a little while prior to COVID-19. And, you know, we saw the opportunity to take the content and all this hard work we're putting into building a great booth on the show floor and just expanding that beyond the show. And so that was a great idea we had. And we said, hey, we'll have this in the pipeline and we'll get to it at some point in the future. And then this happens, and it's like, man, I'm glad we had that conversation and at least had a little bit of thought around it, because we need it now. We need to be able to have that. And kind of to your point, Jeff, is when we do get back to normal and we are in face-to-face, like, digital isn't going away, virtual events aren't going away. This is going to really build a bedrock layer of support underneath those platforms and tools. And then it'll be kind of up to us and up to our clients on how we weave that back in to face-to-face. But I think it's a great thing that this is being put front and center and that we're putting the resources into it as an entire, you know, industry, because it's going to make events better in the long term, because you'll have the pros of being face to face and the pros of being virtual all together in one event, and it's just going to make it for a more cohesive experience.
I agree.
So what's considered harder and what's considered easier with a virtual event?
Never lose sight of your goals. I kind of mentioned the goals in the beginning. I think, you know, make sure that everything you're doing at least results in something. That's just kind of a general good marketing rule. You should never do just for the sake of doing. So kind of keep your eyes on that. Attention spans, I think, are something really important to remember, that although you may be used to doing a three-day show, a three-day virtual event where you're running content from 8 in the morning till 10 at night every single day, you know, depending on your audience, may not be a fit in the virtual sense, because you have to kind of put yourself in their shoes where they're sitting behind a computer watching a screen. And so, you know, you want to make sure to have that balance.
So would the why questions that you ask during the planning of an in-person event be any different than a virtual event?
I would say on the surface, no. I think that you are going to a show for a reason, right? You are exhibiting for a reason or a purpose for your company. You are either providing information to your clients, like I said, or demonstrating products, or getting leads, or just making connections. And you still have those goals, regardless of what's going on in the world, regardless of what's going on from an event standpoint. So if you are doing a virtual effort, I think that's always a great place to start. Now, those goals may evolve based on the audience you're able to bring in. You know, depending, virtual events are more work to get people in the door, right? Because you are not relying on the show provider necessarily to ticketed people and bring in kind of this wide net of folks walking around and perusing booths on the floor, but it is that opportunity where you can kind of make it a little bit more about you. So if you are having an event and you have lead lists and you have groups of people that you want to get information to, you can target those folks and bring them in, and it's just the you show, right? You can perform and give information and talk about yourself, and there's no other distractions or other booths to get to. It's all about you. And so I think it's important to kind of keep that in perspective as well.
So what's a good way to test your audience to see how they react to a virtual event?
I think, well, if they start small, yep, versus trying to do something really huge, and see how it works for them. And they can learn a lot from doing a small event. you know, take it one step at a time, because you can do that. Mm-hmm. You don't have to, you know, commit to doing a whole conference or a 3-day thing, but you can do something small as a starting point. That's one approach.
Yeah, historically, data had kind of pointed us to, it was around 50% of folks said that they would attend a virtual event, you know, on average, when brands would put out information. And so there's also no harm too in putting out information like that. Put out a survey question. Put out, you know, ask your tailored audience that you know and trust. You know, is this something that you would attend? What would you like to see out of it? And kind of engage them in that process. You know your goals at the end of the day, but there's a way for you as a brand to kind of put your toe in the water and have that conversation. And echoing Jeff's point of starting small, you know, there's no harm in doing a Facebook Live video or a Zoom webinar or something with a small group of folks to kind of get some content out there as you're kind of planning what are your overall goals, and make sure that the information you're putting out there, the people that you want to have out there, kind of align with those goals.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Clearly, there's a higher tolerance for the virtual events. I mean, in 2019, we would never have expected the explosion of virtual events and as many people that are attending them, you know, that we have in 2020. So what technology have you seen that's really advancing during this move to virtual events?
So I think communication tools are evolving very quickly. So, you know, we all know the success story of Zoom in the last 3 months, where they were kind of a third or fourth tier player in video conferencing, and now they're the number one way that people connect on the planet. So you see these kind of off-the-shelf consumer tools rising up. For me, though, what really gets me excited is the kind of the stuff that's happening on the peripherals. I know we've been playing a lot with augmented reality and incorporating those into our virtual events. There are groups out there that are doing things like, you know, 3D modeling and volumetric capture and VR events that are more of a one-to-one piece and less about that group mentality, less about the larger overall experience, and more about kind of an intimate digital experience for folks. And so I think you're going to start to see the optics change on how to solve some of these things, where before it was like, let's cast the wide net, see how many people we can bring in and accomplish our goals. And I think as technology kind of spins up in different ways, like not everybody has a VR headset, but I do. And so is there a brand that is trying to, you know, attract me or show me a product that I can see something in VR or augmented reality that, you know, maybe not everybody can see, but it can be for me, and I'm their audience. And if it's compelling enough and strikes a chord with me, then I will, you know, accomplish their goal for them, whether that's buying a product or hiring them as a service. And, you know, so it comes back to the knowing your audience.
I'm going to take a second and shift gears here. Maybe starting with Jeff, can you take a little bit of time to talk about the role of design and creative as it relates to virtual events?
That's an important question, because you know, the creative aspect of crafting an event, whether, or an experience, really, that's what it's about. We live, as many people know now, I mean, we live in the experience economy. This is a virtual experience, it's different, but I think that's an area of strength that our team has, based on, you know, years and years of crafting these in-person kind of experiences. And experiences in the corporate world, in the business settings, don't generally just happen by accident. I mean, they are crafted and created, and we start, you know, when we're working with clients from the very beginning, you know, trying to understand what their goals and objectives are, and we create that experience, that wow moment that we want to have happen when attendees walk into a space, or they attend some live event that we might be putting on, or even in a retail space or in a museum setting or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. There's a revelation of insight or some kind of thing, a euphoric moment that happens that has to be created generally. And we can't always control how that comes out, because everybody reacts differently to different things. Thinking about the Mississippi Civil Rights Museum, you know, rotunda area, and this music playing, and people respond differently. But in this case, we're taking those ideas and thoughts behind how you create moments and how you create those experiences and translating that into a virtual dimension. And so a lot of the principles still apply. A lot of the creativity still applies. And it can't just be, you know, a direct translation of that, because the experience is going to manifest itself differently. But the principles behind creating that wow, aha moment, or whatever that information is that we're trying to convey, is important to know, and that's a part that I think if people focus too much on the technology piece, they miss the storyline and the narrative that we're trying to communicate. So it isn't just about the bells and whistles and putting the technology pieces together to make this event happen. It's about crafting that experience in the end so that you're communicating a certain message to the people that you're trying to communicate to and really making an impression with them.
Yeah, and that could be daunting to have that conversation with your client as or even internally as you're looking at a virtual event. And so an easy way to get to that is to look a little bit about the end feeling or the end emotion you want someone to do following one of your goals. So like when you're doing an event and you say, you know, I want someone to feel knowledgeable, or I want someone to feel confident. Like pick an emotion for a activity or a section of the event that you want them to get to, and that can help to drive how you build that experience. Right. If you can pair that up, and then you know, as you're writing copy, or as you're designing the user interface, or as you're working with your third party company to put together the event, like if you know what you want people to feel at the end of it, or at the end of a certain section, that is a pretty like clear black and white way to kind of reverse engineer right. that experience.
So how do you measure success when it comes to virtual events?
I think on the surface level, you know, you obviously have your goals that you're going into the event for, right? So if it is product demos or leads or whatever is important to your particular business, the interesting thing to remember with virtual is that you have analytics, like you mentioned. You have this extra layer of how many people are attending, what are they doing, what are they clicking on, what are they actually engaging with, how long are they engaging with it. And you don't get that in face-to-face necessarily, right? You may get a rough head count of the people that went to your booth or the rough head count of people who attended the show, but you don't know unless you are going out of your way to track that every time you do an in-person event, what that engagement is. Like you can kind of peep inside someone's head who's an attendee and see what they're thinking a little bit by how they're interacting with your virtual event. And so that is something that you have this data, right? Now you have to be able to do something with that data, but you have that added benefit of data coming into the virtual events. But from an ROI or from a tracking standpoint, kind of those metrics, I think you have your specific ones that align with your business and your goals. But I would watch engagement, I would watch, for us, like a attendance, right? How long people were staying engaged was important because that meant what we were doing mattered to them, mattered to the audience. So I think there's some good time metrics there. And then, on things that weren't necessarily presented live or actionable, like we had documents and resources as part of our event that people downloaded, like that to us was really valuable because we could see what content was important and, the benefit of being able to take that and then apply that to other areas of our business, other marketing efforts that we're doing. If we see that, a piece on, designing, certain kind of engagements in a museum really resonated with people at the event. We saw, 10 times more people download that than anything else, then we should maybe do some more content around that. Maybe we'll make a video, maybe we'll spin off a separate event. You're letting your audience kind of tell you things that would normally have to come out through conversation or be really gut guesses. You're getting that hard data to be able to make those decisions.
So looking into the future, what will events look like 10 years from now?
Well, I think I'll start with that one, but I think it's going to be a hybrid. I don't think that in real life experiences or trade shows or real life events are going to go away at all. Those will come back. I'm fully convinced of that. I think there's too much desire and demand for that face-to-face kind of experience that humans have had and always will have, and I don't think that'll go away. But I think there'll be a balance in the end of that where the virtual experience will play a much more significant role in that world than it ever would have without COVID. I think it's been growing over time, and there were just debates years ago about virtual taking over experiences and all that. And it has now, but I think that's only for a time period. And I think it'll balance out to where, the interesting thing is probably the face-to-face trade shows and events, experiences like that will have a much broader reach because of this. and they will be able to, at least in the shorter term, reach a lot of people who can't otherwise attend, who are still, you know, isolated or whatever, or they can't travel. And so you'll be able to reach those people. And I think that it'll be interesting to see how the dynamics develop, where you'll be able to be remote or virtually watching an experience that's happening live and participating and interacting with people there who are at the event, and how that interaction develops, I think it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and I think it's going to go two ways. I think you're absolutely right, where virtual will bring this broader sense to folks. And I can see, in my opinion, kind of the face-to-face efforts becoming a little bit more tailored at first. I think, like, if we're looking a couple years out as we start to ease back into opening up, I think you're going to get this very focused, like, if you're going to make the effort to go be in person somewhere, it's going to be, like, worth your time, energy, and dollar to be able to make that happen in this climate. And I think there are going to be things that come out of that face-to-face that are going to stick long-term. You know, we started to kind of see this trend before COVID-19, where it was the authentic experience, the more personalized experience. Technology was allowing us to cater more in that in-person booth space to individuals, right? Where they would have more of a kind of a branded for them experience going through a space. And I think you're going to see that even hyper focused now, where if they're going to bring out people, if they're going to entice you to come be face-to-face as this starts to open back up, as much as you crave it as an audience member, I think they're going to go above and beyond to make it really worth your while to be there. Because I think that we're going to see success in the virtual space on those, you know, if we're looking at it like from a lead funnel standpoint, you're going to see virtual cover a lot more of the top of the funnel. And I think long term, you know, again, 10 years down the road, you're going to see a lot more of that, because technology is going to advance at a pace that we can't even sit here and hypothetically get to in the next 10 years. But I think you're going to see that the face-to-face is going to have to, as this gets better up here, the face-to-face is going to have to get better and be more, you know, impactful. And I think brands and companies are up for it. I think companies like us are up for building those type of experiences. But I think it's going to change. I think this is going to be a little bit of kind of a before COVID and after COVID timeline for us in the industry. And that's not a bad thing. I think where we're going is going to be really interesting. I think you're right, accessibility-wise, like there are some bad habits, were some bad habits in trade show space. We all know them. And I think some of those will go away as we come out of this. And what really matters is that experience and kind of those goals will really stay and still be impactful.
Joey, Jeff, thank you for pulling out your crystal ball and sharing your vision of the future with us. We really hope that you guys have enjoyed the time. We've had an awesome time doing it, had a lot of fun. We appreciate the time that we've been given to kind of share what we see as the future of events and how virtual fits into all of that.
Thank you all for joining us today on this episode of the Global Exhibitor Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this session. Our prayers and thoughts are continuing to be with everyone as they are struggling with or facing the impact of the global pandemic known as COVID. If you enjoyed this excerpt from Rethinking Events, I would encourage you to go to their website at rethinking.events, and you should be able to access all the other speakers and content there. I believe it's free of charge, and there's some really good stuff there. So please feel free to do that and take advantage of that content. Thanks again for joining us, and be on the lookout for some upcoming episodes. We do have a number of episodes recorded, which will be coming out shortly on various topics, and try to stay safe and wear masks when you're out in public. Thank you, and talk to you soon.
We like to remind people that all business is conducted within the context of culture. So each episode provides insights to help marketers understand the cultures they're trying to reach and strategies for building bridges across cultural divides. If you like the Global Exhibitor Podcast, please share it with others, subscribe to it, and rate it on iTunes. We greatly appreciate the feedback. Please also check out our website and blog at www.globalexhibitor.com. And finally, if you or someone you know would make an interesting guest on this podcast, please let us know by sending an email to guest@globalexhibitor.com. And until next time, thank you for listening.